The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
11 minutes after 6, welcome to Thursday, Conspiracy Theory Thursday, April 3rd, 2025. 42 degrees, a little bit of wetness, rather. It'll get a bit warmer today. Really starting to get warmer into the 70s to mid-70s. Although I still think that may be a little bit below normal. I don't know. It could be still continuing to be a bit of a cool spring. Mr. Outdoors will have his report tomorrow at 7:10 or so as we dig into that. Well, here we are the day after Liberation Day, and all eyes are going to be on the markets. Markets look to be taking some pretty severe pullbacks today. Dow Jones Industrial Average, which was at about 41,000, I think last time I checked, looking to be down about 1,200 points. At least that's what the futures are saying. S&P also there. I have more of what I'm looking at in the Russell 2000 or in the Russell small caps. I have those small cap speculation kind of stocks that I've been playing with in my baby 401k. Actually, my 401k has actually not been doing all that badly as of late because it was heavily into gold and miners and silvers and minerals and things like that. And that's kind of where I have been playing along with it. Gold gave back a little bit overnight, like 40, 50 bucks, but it's still sitting up there around 3,100 bucks. You know, it's still in that particular neighborhood. It is the fear trade right now, apparently, but we'll kind of keep an eye on this. Now, a little bit later on in the morning, I'm going to be talking with Ken Raposa. Ken Raposa, interesting guy, and he's had a long career in the press, staff reporter for Wall Street Journal in Brazil, so he's a big financial reporter, and he's an analyst at Coalition for a Prosperous America, and they're focusing on industrial strategy for preserving investments in domestic manufacturing. Of course, he's very happy about the Trump tariffing, I wish they wouldn't call it tariffs because they are taxes. They are taxes, and don't let anybody tell you that they're not taxes. They are essentially import sales taxes, which have been boosted here over the last 24 hours. President Trump ended up doing his thing. Essentially, hey, if you're tariffing us, we're going to tariff you. And everybody, every country is starting off at a 10% baseline. So at minimum, there's going to be a 10% sales tax for you to import anything from anywhere. That is the basic basis with where it starts. And countries that have severe trade deficits with the United States, you'll have to pay a higher import tax when they come in. That's all it means. Now, I know that Ken Raposa and others will probably try to tell me that other people are going to pay it, or like China will pay it. And to an extent, they're right. To an extent. Because you can get to a situation where a state-run enterprise in China that will say, okay, you will have you have a 34%. Essentially, there's a 34% sales tax on a lot of stuff coming in from China as of today. Because you had the 10% basic tax and then another 24-25% layered on top of that, car taxes, car import taxes, and things like that. Although I don't know if we import many cars from China, not a lot of KYB here or anything like that, or whatever that Chinese brand is, although it's very popular in China. Now, Korea, of course, we import a lot of cars from Korea, Kia, Hyundai, things like that. And at last report, nothing was going to touch them because they're agreeing to build a steel plant in Louisiana and build a car manufacturing plant. So you're going to start building more. And I think President Trump will be letting up on that. But anyway, it's a new tariff-based economic plan, essentially, with what is going on in here. 10% baseline tax on all imports. So it's an import tax from all countries, even higher tariff rates on dozens of nations that run trade surpluses, meaning that we buy more from them than we sell to them. So the whole idea is to try to goose domestic production. Now, what is really interesting, Town Hall reporting this morning that the Mexican government will not impose retaliatory tariffs. They're pretty exposed. There's a good reason for this. They're in a weak position, as he would have told Zelensky, you don't have the cards. So Mexico will not be doing any retaliatory tariffs. Now, what is interesting, Town Hall also reporting this morning that the Ontario Premier, Doug Ford, suggesting that Canada would drop its tariffs on U.S. goods if President Donald Trump eased up on his tariffs on Canadian goods. He did that in an appearance at CNBC. So a lot of this is going to be a bit of, we'll wait and see, right? You know, a lot of this is you kind of have to see. Generally speaking, I'm not a fan of American consumers already strapped having to pay extra taxes. My concern is, and I'm going to talk with Ken Raposo about this when he comes on, he's going to be kind of my tariff guy this morning, is that we're levying a lot of taxes, import taxes, on stuff that we don't make and likely cannot make for a while. And that could be wildly inflationary. That may be why the gold trade is still looking so insanely good at the moment in the investment world. That could still be pretty inflationary. I will be curious to see. Now, I'm not a stock guy. I'm not like an expert on this, but I read enough about this that I have a reasonable kind of, 6 miles wide and an inch deep kind of perspective on a lot of this. I'll be curious to see what happens to domestic drug manufacturers, the Pfizers and the various other places, the Modernas. And the reason for this being that a lot, and this is the part that I was really concerned about when it comes to the tariffing, and that is having to do with the with drugs. Because so much of the medical industrial complex is in China right now, because it is the least expensive way to manufacture drugs. Now, that's a danger for us. We can talk about it. There's a good reason why you'd like to see more of those drugs made here. But you start wondering if we could be held hostage to a certain extent on some of this. If already at a time which medical costs have been soaring year after year, and Medicare, Medicaid budgets are just being busted left and right, and people are having a lot of trouble keeping the lights on in doctors' offices, and doctors aren't getting reimbursement. And then if we have a big increase in the price of pharmaceuticals, maybe pharmaceuticals were exempted. There's still a lot of moving targets right now at this point. I'll be curious to see what the stock prices of places like Pfizer that could be more of a domestic supply chain. If we end up, if they end up soaring, we could, see that they're planning on moving a lot of that drug manufacturing to here. It does take time to build that kind of stuff, though. All these medical vats and yeasty kind of things. It's almost like you're making wine sometimes when you hear about some of the processes of making some of these biologics and pharmaceutical concoctions and things. I don't claim to be an expert on that, but anyway, I'll be curious to see what happens with that. That's one that I think is really interesting. And the Trump administration says, when people would be, I think it was Brett Baer talking to, Stephen Moore, maybe it was one of the other people yesterday. Well, what are they going to do when people see that something, their car costs 25% more? And he said, buy American. Well, buy American is really great if the fact is that our American car companies, for the most part, haven't been under the boot of the big regulatory of the regulatory state here for a long, long time. And as Eric Peters and I have been talking about, this whole thing about, you're going to build a car which is compatible with our dictates, that sort of thing. And so we end up having these, almost 4,000-pound behemoths with three cylinder engines and three turbochargers on them, that blow up at 24,000 miles. I don't know. Certain car dealerships could be a really, really tough thing. Does it make America great to have your Camry go from $35,000 to $42,000? I don't know, because remember, those are just taxes. Those are just taxes. And I guess maybe we're going to have to pay for quality, because that has been a problem for the American manufacturer, too. They don't have the quality of a lot of the foreign manufacturers. I don't like saying this, but this has been something which has been going on for a long, long time. There's a reason why Toyota was number one, and it's not because of the name Toyota, because it was the best car. Now, some of those are made here, though. So that may temper some of this stuff. But if you want a Toyota Prius, as an example, you know, the highest, most efficient, you know, modeled internal combustion engine car that we have on the market at about 56, 57 miles per gallon, you would have to pay a tariff, apparently, unless it's on the lot right now. So I don't know exactly where it's going to go. It is sort of a blunt force trauma thing. Is this going to be kind of like a going cold turkey on the economy? And yeah, could have some serious short-term effects. Could the short-term effects turn into larger-term effects? I don't know. I do know a bit of my history, though, that as countries tend to, well, as the United States tends to get tariffy, if you look back into the history of the Great Depression, you end up setting off a potentially a global trade war that could cause deeper problems than we think, maybe unexpected or unintended consequences. A lot of this is I don't know right now. And for anybody who does claim that they know everything, then you'll know you're talking to a fool, because we don't know. You know, the economies are not just like machines that you put oil in one place and you put gasoline in another place, and that it just runs exactly the way you want it to, because it's based on the choices and the input of millions upon millions of people and their individual choices and what they choose to prioritize. Tariffs are not freedom-inducing, which is why I think it's kind of ironic to hear it termed Liberation Day. But in this particular case, Donald Trump is wanting to take the power of the state for a ostensibly higher purpose. And he wants to be able to restore more American manufacturing than we have. And that could ultimately be a good thing. Could also be ultimately really bad for the time being or a long time. I don't know. A lot of this is an open question, but we will see. And we'll continue to talk about these things as best as we see it. This could be the beginning of what they would term interesting times. Could be a good interesting times, could be end up being a curse. I don't know. The one thing I will tell you, though, is that I spent a good hour the other day, 45 minutes to an hour, I forget how long it was, but I was watching a video from Porter Stansberry, pretty well-known financier in the stock market world, and he was talking with a Trump insider who was still a friend of President Trump, and they had come to the agreement that the tariff world that we're heading into is designed to be a controlled demolition of the United States economic order right now, the way that we have been doing this for a long time, because they are under the impression, and they agreed. Now, these were one of these guys, who, of course, is a Trump insider, still a deep friend of Trump. His name is Brad something. I should have written it down. I probably should go back and just watch the video again, but I haven't had time to do so. They both agreed that this is that it looks to them like a controlled demolition, ultimately designed to kickstart the United States of America. However, that controlled demolition will also be wiping out trillions of dollars of wealth in the short term, is how they're looking at this. And there's a good case to be made that the way it has been working, with all you had to do was invest in the Magnificent Seven, all you had to do was buy Apple, you bought Apple, it tucked it away, man, and Tim Cook was just going to keep churning, you know, stock prices going up and going up and going up and going up, right? Well, Apple gave back 7% just yesterday. You know, 7%. It looks like it's going to be going down today. You know, the Amazons, the Apples, the Facebooks and Metas, you know, all these sort of things. All you had to do was just invest in NVIDIA and the Magnificent Seven and just watch the money roll in. And all of this usually based on foreign manufacturing. I mean, you look at Apple, the Apple iPhone, that if you have an Apple iPhone in your pocket, made in China, made in Vietnam, made in different areas of South Asia, there's now big fat tariffs on top of that. And the investors are going, uh-oh, Yeah, you're not just going to be picking up the latest iPhone that all of a sudden costs 35% more than it did the day before. Now, we may not see those prices reflected immediately, but that's the way investors are looking at it. But back to Porter Stansberry, you know, his video about this. And he was trying to sell somebody, you know, you send him $199 and he'll give you a list of these Trump trades that are that he figures are going to be the good ones because a lot of them are connected with Trump insiders. And he says, this is what is necessarily going to have to happen. You control demolition, the current thing. So I don't know. We could be experiencing a great reset, whether we thought it was going to be a great reset under Trump or not. Maybe a different kind of great reset in which we wipe out a lot of the bubbly, frothy stock market that we have right now to rebuild on a more domestic-focused kind of system. It could be. It could be. But when you have friends of Trump and Trump insiders saying, oh, yeah, this is a controlled demolition and there's no way he was going to be able to get this past voters if he had promised this earlier, but he believes it's the best thing for the United States of America. When the insiders are saying this, I'm thinking, well, you know, I'll pay attention to it. It's an interesting interesting theory. Maybe we get the great reset without the bugs, without eating the bugs. But perhaps we will have to take the bus because the car will be too expensive. I'm just saying, you know, who knows where this is going? We're going into uncharted territory right now, my folks, my friends, okay, my friends. Isn't that what it's what they always say on Sean Hannity always calls everybody my friend, right? Well, I think you're my friend, too, even if we disagree on things. We could talk about this and more, too. 770-5633-770-KMED. I had a question about a local news story, kind of a little news story, but I haven't heard any follow-up. Does anybody know what happened to the Jackson County RV park that was facing eviction because all the people that were living there, they because the zoning wasn't proper, they couldn't stay there. They had a bunch of folks staying there in this RV park for nearly 3 years. It's water's edge. Does anybody know, did they evict them? Are all the RVs still there? It's near Grants Pass on Rogue River Highway. Has anybody had an eyeball on it? Are the RVs gone? Did the county finally move them out or not? Just let me know. Just kind of one of those stories I was just curious about, if the older folks that were there are allowed to stay there somehow or if they've been kicked out. 770-KMED, you're on the Bill Myers Show.
You need a water well project done right. Quickly.
Sign up at markpatrickseminars.com.
This is Randall with Advanced Air, and I'm on KMED.
630. Miner Dave checking in here. Dave, they're actually looking at a pardon for you over at the White House, huh?
Yeah, well, I sent in because I didn't know how to do the DOJ until the HHS guy told me how to do it.
Okay, hang on just a second. For people who don't know, Miner Dave, Dave Everest here, you ended up spending, what, 30 days in jail a while back? How many years ago was that? That was an old case.
It was back in 2013.
Back in 2013, and that was about living on your mining claim, and they went after you on that, right?
Right. It was. I was convicted for not having a plan of operations, for having a bucket, a shovel, a rock bar, and a sluice box. They no longer do what they did to me to any of the miners now.
Well, they were trying, I think, to make an example of you at that time. I honestly think that was what was going on.
Right. And they spent a lot of money doing it. But that aside, I got a call from HHS yesterday where the White House mistakenly sent it to them. And when I talked to the guy, he said, well, I'll send it back to the White House and tell them to send it to the DOJ over a request for pardon. Then he told me how to get a hold of the pardon office of the DOJ, and I sent them an email, and I resent it to the White House. Of course, I copied you in an email.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so maybe I'm up. I don't know. He was confused why they sent it to him.
Okay, I'm kind of curious. What could be accomplished by you being pardoned by the White House if this were to happen from what happened in 2013?
I would get a lien lifted off my Social Security of $110 a month.
Oh, I see. Because of... Oh, okay. All right, well...
I'm paying restitution right now from them stealing my property.
Oh, got it. Yeah, the mining claim back in the day. Wow. That is really interesting, but at least they're taking you seriously. I'm glad to see that. I really am.
Well, I don't know if I'll get a pardon or not, but it surprised the heck out of me.
Well, all you have to do to get a pardon, I think, right now is if you are a big oligarch that, and I don't like saying this, but President Trump ended up pardoning that guy that was the fraudster that ran Nikola, that big electric vehicle, the truck one, the one that never worked, but he bilked people out of millions, you know, for that.
Yeah.
Can't believe that.
Yeah.
So certainly, if he can grant a pardon to that clown, he can certainly grant a pardon to you. Okay?
Right.
All right.
Yeah, I hope so.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Miner Dave. 6:32. this is I hope he gets his pardon, don't you? I would love to see Miner Dave finally. Gosh, you know, $110 they're dinging his Social Security each month, you know, because of the mining claim brouhaha they were engaged in back in the day. 6:33 at KMED. Gregory Wrightstone, he knows a lot about the geology, too. Maybe not a miner, but we're going to talk about if there's any possibility that the gangrene grips are going to be shuttered here anytime soon. We'll get him on the show. Rob Gardner says, don't be in a hurry to do winter cleanup.
Wait for the cleanup until the possibility that insects, beneficial insects, have overwintered in your yard. And one of the things that was so hard for me to do initially was, like with my daylilies, to leave those stems there.
Talk to the Rogue Gardener live Saturdays 10 to noon, a Sunday morning encore at 9 on KMED, sponsored by Grange Co-op.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot. All the
squeezers and cash can hit our bank account as soon as tomorrow.
When you need extra cash, go to 27cash.com. That's 27cash.com. 27cash.com.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
6:38, and standing by, hopefully we're going to get a chance to talk with Gregory Wrightstone. I just couldn't locate him here right away, but I'm happy to talk about other things here, too, this morning. Holly Morton joins me from Joe County. He was at the last night's Grants Pass City Council meeting here yesterday. How are you doing this morning, Holly? Welcome.
Good morning. I'm doing okay. Thanks.
Great.
Yeah, it was a good meeting. They're talking about the Vine Street project, which is basically a homeless plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much broader than anything we've ever done and much more concise. And I'm actually kind of excited about it. It checks the boxes for me. For one thing, I was never comfortable with any program that just stuffed people into some sort of a shelter, low barrier shelter, without a drug program. Because the big problem, the first turn on the Rubik's Cube, is to get people off drugs. And this plan, I think, is the first one that's really going to really headed in that direction. And I think it might actually be a prototype for other communities to get some of these problems solved.
That would be absolutely wonderful, Holly, if this ends up occurring. It might take a little bit longer than we think, though, to actually get all the moving parts in there, right?
Well, it seems like it's moving. But, you know, if that makes sense. Anything that is complex is this. But they've gotten U-Turn for Christ involved. And U-Turn for Christ, they're very good people. In fact, at our Patriots Conference, they volunteered, came in and moved our, you know, a lot of our heavy furniture in, heavy furniture out. We're a huge help for that. Because we're a bunch of old ladies running this thing, and it would have been very hard for us to do it ourselves.
Oh, hey, by the way, when is that Patriots Conference going on? It's going to be, 10 o'clock, I think, this Saturday, right?
The Patriots rally that we're having this weekend is at 10 o'clock at the office. That's going to be fantastic.
Okay, well, and just make sure, and like I said, though, given the fact that Indivisible is going to be protesting right across the street, by the way, Gregory Wrightstone standing by, so we might have to talk about this a little bit later on, some more to flesh about more of this.
Good,
but
I love Gregory.
Oh, I do, too. I do, too. I know he's standing online on the other line. But remember, Indivisible, though, is going to be protesting across the street at the Josephine County Courthouse at noon. So don't leave your GOP headquarters unprotected on Saturday, okay?
Well, we're going to have to be careful. It's kind of ridiculous. They are ridiculous. Alrighty, Bill.
Yes, they are, but I just wanted to make sure. But still, good to hear the guardedly positive news that maybe a little bit of accountability and getting some people off drugs would be happening in the homelessness world. Okay? Thanks so much.
There are a bunch of things about that program I like. We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Thanks a bunch. It's 19 before 7. And like I had mentioned, standing by here, I was looking at him. I said, that's Gregory's number. It's Gregory Wrightstone from the CO2 Institute. And he is a geologist and executive director of the CO2 Coalition, actually, is what it is, in Arlington, Virginia. And it's great to have you back on. Gregory, how you doing this morning, sir?
Oh, busy, busy, busy. It's an exciting time for those of us who have been fighting the climate change nonsense for decades now. You know, for the last, what's it been, 15, 20 plus years, we've been facing stiff headwinds, and now it feels like in the last 6 or 8 weeks, the wind is at our back, and it's a gale force wind blowing us forward. So lots of big things, EPA, Department of Energy, and others, Trump administration rolling back one stupid, idiotic, economically destructive regulation after another. It's not going to get done all overnight, but boy, it's a good start.
It's once again guarded, you know, a lot of optimism. You know, it's not everything. It's just not going to get done instantly. A lot of this, I think, is going to take some work from Congress, too. By the way, before we move forward, I want to make sure that people, if they wanted to find out more, a very convenient warming, how modest warming and more carbon dioxide, more CO2 are benefiting humanity. That is your latest book. And of course, you know, your original one that put you on the map was,
Inconvenient Facts.
Yeah, Inconvenient Facts. Yeah, Inconvenient Facts.
Well, I'm gonna break it on your show first. And actually, my latest book was just published yesterday.
Oh.
And it's my first venture into a illustrated children's science comic book, basically. Mm-hmm. The title is Chloe the Clownfish Sleeps Well. And you can, if you search, it's unavailable at Amazon. The Kindle is, and Amazon has yet to get them in stock. So if you go there, it says out of stock, but we expect them to arrive early next week and be shipped out. Chloe the Clownfish Sleeps Well, and it's a story of a clownfish that lives on the Great Barrier Reef and it can't sleep at night because she's been told her home on the reef is being destroyed by climate change. And so we're able to use this storyline to tell the actual truth. I collaborated with Dr. Peter Ridd, one of the foremost reef experts in the world on this, and we're able to use this to weave in what the facts are about the Great Barrier Reef and other corals around the world that aren't in danger of destruction. Actually, they're thriving because, as we find out in this book, corals like it hot, and the hotter the better. And so they thrive in very, very warm water.
Well, humanity in general thrives when it's a little bit warmer. In fact, we're still, I was reading some stat the other day, I don't know if you can confirm this as a geologist or not, but there was a stat that was in some story that said that we are still at about 10% of the coolest time in our Earth. You know, we're still in relatively cool times as contrasted to times in which the Earth was greener, per se, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The average of Earth's history temperature is some 8 to 10 degrees centigrade warmer than what we are today, which would be quite warm. It's probably, what, 15 degrees Fahrenheit, which, you know, it's warm, but we know. So yes, we are still technically in an ice age, and we've been in ice age for 51 million years. Thankfully, we're in what's called an interglacial warming period, and not in a period of ice advance and cold. So we started coming out of that 10 or 11,000 years ago, and these interglacial warm periods are hugely beneficial to life and to humanity. And we're going to go into another cold period and another ice advance at some time. And I don't have a crystal ball, and I can't tell you when it might be. But it's probably going to, it might be hundreds of years away or a thousand, or it might be next week. We just can't tell. And so these are things, but you are absolutely correct. All of the other previous warm periods over the last several thousand years have correlated directly to huge advances in human civilization and the human condition thrived in much warmer temperatures than we have today. And it was the cold periods were horrific with crop failure, famine, pestilence, and mass depopulation.
In fact, I couldn't help but think back to a time in the early part of the Revolutionary War of, Washington at Valley Forge, right? And you read about those times and how cold and the deprivation and the problems with food and everything else. That was one of those very, very cold times, right? In United States history, there were times in which year without a summer. There was talk about that. Wow. I think that was after a volcanic eruption. But tell us a bit about that, if you could.
Yeah, I like using historical information because people understand that so much easier than, carbon isotopes or oxygen isotope data to determine the temperatures. But
right.
If I tell you that during the medieval warm period, or the Roman warm period rather, Romans were growing citrus in the north of England near Hadrian's Wall, you go, it had to be warmer. If I tell you that millet, a crop that can only be grown in subtropical or tropical areas, was being grown in Scandinavia during the Bronze Age, the Minoan warm period, you go, it had to be a lot warmer. Or you were just referencing George Washington. And if I tell you that Martha Washington loved to have ice in her drinks in the summer, so George dug a well, and that was their ice house. It was insulated. He would have his slaves and indentured servants go down every winter to the Potomac and cut the thick ice into big blocks and haul it up to put. You can visit that ice house today at Mount Vernon. But that doesn't happen rarely, maybe every 30 or 40 years today, that the Potomac freezes like that. But during that time, similar to Valley Forge, they experienced terribly cold winters. And so thankfully, we've been coming. We're in a warming trend that started not long after that, more than 300 years ago. And so we can look back at these historical records to see, it was really cold at that time. And we're thankfully warming up, and it's a good thing. We also, in my book, I have a picture of my wife and I are standing in front of a boat in front of John Muir Glacier in Alaska, which is in Glacier Bay. Mm-hmm. And the captain came on while we were standing there. He said, "This is proof that the earth is warming, that this glacier has retreated," whatever it was. But I said, really? So I took a look at it in my book on capture that ice, there was no Glacier Bay because it was entirely ice filled up until the late 1700s. And then it started warming long before we started adding CO2, long before the first Model T came off the assembly line. It started retreating in the late 1700s, and almost 90% of the retreat of Glacier Bay in Alaska occurred before we started adding CO2.
Tended to look at. We're looking at glaciers as a good thing to keep going. Now, like I said, a glacier is neither good nor bad, but it is an indicator of very, very cold temperatures. People can't live in glacier-like conditions. That's our bottom line here, right?
Exactly. In fact, if you look at during the Little Ice Age, that time we talked about with George Washington, it went from about the year 1250 to 1850. Glaciers advanced around the world in high latitude areas and high altitudes, and great parts of actually France and Germany. Entire villages had to be abandoned in the 1500s and 1600s because of the ice advance. And we have great lithographs of that. And so now we have what we have now, the retreat of the glaciers, which confirms that we're in a warming trend. And we should all be thankful of that because, of course, my new book is called A Very Convenient Warming, and the thrust here is that we see that that warming temperatures and more CO2 are hugely beneficial to the to humanity and civilization.
By the way, Gregory Wrightstone with me once again, geologist and, of course, CO2 Coalition, and you talked about Chloe the Clownfish. People are asking me already, could you repeat the title of this children's book? Because, and the reason, and I'll do this in a second, I'll let you speak about it. I'll tell you why. Because here in Southern Oregon, we're plagued by children who are terrified by anything involving carbon dioxide. There was the situation, Ashland High School students petitioning the city council to have natural gas restricted because they're terrified and they've been inculcated for decades with this kind of nonsense here. Really,
yeah, and this is this is the first book. It's a new series we've initiated. We had five other books. If you go to CO2LearningCenter.com, CO2LearningCenter.com, you can find all of those. And importantly, for your listeners, if they've got a homeschooling, if they're parents or they have grandchildren that are being homeschooled, we have lesson plans that you can download at no cost, PDFs. You can print them out at home at no cost. The lesson plans are really well done by Dr. Sharon Camp, a PhD in chemistry, AP science reader and teacher. And we've got that. So Chloe the Clownfish, again, Chloe the Clownfish sleeps well. And at the end of the day, she learns the truth about the Great Barrier Reef and corals in general. And she can sleep well, finally, because she knows that she's been told, well, we don't say it like this in the book, but she's been fed a pack of lies about this. And so our next book, it's in production. It should be out soon. Will be Foxy the Fruit Bat Sleeps Well. And, this takes place on the island of the Maldives that are supposed to be underwater in a few decades.
That's interesting. It's interesting you're bringing this up because you're trying to hit the kids early as they're in their learning years, and you want to get some real scientific fact. Now, what you're talking about, the issues about CO2 and the carbon cycle, was something that was quite common to be taught in school correctly back when I was a kid. That was only 40, 50 years ago here, Gregory. The carbon cycle was something that we all knew. We were taught this in biology class, and we knew that, plants took in carbon dioxide and grew, and then we got oxygen from the plants to breathe. And so it ended up being like a win-win situation. And how do we get to the point where these simple facts about CO2 in the air and the beneficial aspect of it for plant life, how has this been so thoroughly suppressed for so long, I guess?
It's worse than that, Bill. It's even worse. 30 years ago, almost all scientific curricula for the schools, included teaching the scientific method, which is so important, also critical thinking skills. We've gone away from that. Last year, we added North Carolina, where they added, through some of our efforts, they added the scientific method to their curricula. And so now only two states in the entire United States, all 48 states, do not teach it. They teach, it's replaced by the NGSS, the National whatever Science Standards, and they've removed the scientific method. They don't want your children to think critically. They don't want them to test hypotheses. They want them to just go along with consensus science and groupthink.
And so NGSS is about encouraging consensus, where, in other words, we just vote on this. We vote on the truth rather than being able to prove what the truth is, in other words?
Exactly. What we're being told is, here's the answer, and this is, you cannot question it. It goes with that. And my favorite quote on this was from the famous physicist Richard Feynman, who stated, now think about this, "I would rather have questions that can't be answered than answers that can't be questioned."
Great quote.
And that's what we have today in this climate science, which should be a debate, but they need to silence us. They need to keep us quiet because we tell a compelling fact-based, science-based message of a world that's thriving and prospering, and we show the benefits of more CO2, it's not leading to climate catastrophe. And just recently here, it was just this week, four environmental groups sued Kathy Hochul in New York that she's not following through. They say that
She's not moving fast enough on the climate mandates, right?
Right, because of the increasing air pollution. Well, they're calling carbon dioxide air pollution, and we're fighting that right now. And Lee Zeldin at EPA, the new administrator, has been tasked by Donald Trump to pull that back, to rein in what was called the endangerment finding that was imposed in 2009.
What does the endangerment finding mean? Could you explain it so how we can understand this? Because a lot of times the bureaucracy, the way the bureaucracy works, can be very confusing to we lay folks.
Yeah, so 2009, the Obama administration's EPA ruled that that, well, actually a court decision said you can rule, and then they did, that increasing carbon dioxide is a dangerous pollutant. It could be regulated by the EPA, and boy, did they. And they've been using that ever since. And but the problem with this is they made this regulation without considering all of the science. They only looked at science that supported what they were trying to say. Again, Richard Feynman's quote, you know, we need to silence all dissent about this. And so what we're going to do is hopefully open this back up. And also, Lee Zeldin, one of the first things he did was fire all of the people on his advisory boards. Well done, Lee. here at the CO2 Coalition, as you know, we're the tip of the spear when it comes to science and climate change, and have some 200 of the top scientists and experts in the world. And so we've compiled a list of 55 highly qualified individuals that are mostly PhD men and women that we're going to recommend whenever the nominating process opens up. And it might be next week. It should be pretty shortly to restock his science advisory board and the Clean Air Science Advisory Committee with highly qualified scientists to follow the science and keep the politics out of it, which is what EPA should do.
And, you know, I could see the EPA getting more involved in fact, I was reading a story how the state of Oregon is getting involved in PFAS, the so-called forever chemicals, kind of things. And, you know, there actually is some pretty good science that those are an issue. You know, that's a real pollution issue, right? You know, I kind of miss the days in which the EPA would focus on something which really was a pollutant or a contaminant that is worthy of keeping out of the environment, if at all possible, rather than plant food like CO2.
Exactly.
It's been insane.
If you look at, I believe you've had Patrick Moore on your show before.
But yes, I have.
He was, if you haven't, I need to connect you, but of course he was a co-founder of Greenpeace, and he left. He now sits on the board of directors of the CO2 Coalition. In fact, he hired me for this position. And he left Greenpeace because he said they lost their way. They started going all, you know, they did great things, he says, early in the campaign, you know, stopping the whales from being hunted, stopping baby seals from being slaughtered on the ice in the Arctic. But then they got into things what really drove him away when they went on this mission against chlorine in water. And according to him, chlorinated water has probably saved, he says without a doubt, but probably saved more people from an early death than probably any particular invention or use in the world.
Well, we don't tend to talk about usually, except in areas like Portland, we don't talk about dysentery. Now they're talking about dysentery in Portland because of all of the homelessness and the defecating on the streets, which is causing a problem. But there's a reason why we don't talk about dysentery and various other, and even polio to a certain extent. A lot of polio's taking down was just the fact of increasing sanitation too, and chlorine's a part of that, right? Just be honest with ourselves here.
And we should treasure and be thankful that our air and water is cleaner today than it's probably been since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. It's getting cleaner. We've done just about all we can to clean up our air and water.
Isn't really the part of that, when you mentioned that, Gregory, that you have a bureaucracy, the EPA or the DEQ in our case in the state of Oregon, and you've done 99.9% of the tough stuff, but yet you're still in existence, so you're in search of other pollution dragons to destroy, and if there's nothing else, you have to create one, and otherwise there's no point in having you around? Is that what we're looking at these days, Randy?
That's what we're looking at. Look, and think about NASA. This is a $40 billion group, and their mission was just about done when they got to the moon, and the Saturn mission and the Apollo missions were scaled back, and they're looking around, well, what are we going to do now?
You've got
tens of thousands of employees and a $40 billion budget. Well, our mission's gone. And they looked around. Climate change.
Uh-huh.
So let's go talk. You know, we can be experts in climate change and promote this alarm. We see the same thing at EPA, National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. And in fact, a great example, if you go and search right now for two words, EPA, actually three words, EPA and heat waves, and you'll you'll see a chart. Hopefully, Lee Zeldin will get rid of this pretty quickly. Heat wave index for United States. And it looks really bad. But that it's not what it was. It's not what it is. It's the heat. What they're showing is heat wave index for the 50 largest metropolitan areas of the United States. They don't tell you that.
But you see, that's a different kind of problem. That's the urban heat island effect.
Exactly.
You have replaced trees, and you've put in their place lots of asphalt and concrete. And naturally, yeah, it's going to be a big heat sink. Thank you.
Yeah. And all the heat sources. Think about all the air conditioners, millions of vehicles, all of these pumping out heat. And then the asphalt, the concrete just soaks it up. And the measuring stations we've seen are just horribly sited. Some of these are on airports where they get
They get jet blast as they go by, right?
No, you can see, and they measure these things on by the minutes, and you can see when a jet goes off that the temperature spikes, and they're averaging that all together, and so you're right, it's the urban heat island effect that's driving this. It has nothing to do with climate change. That doesn't stop them from claiming that it is.
Yeah, and by the way, going back to your book once again, in which a very convenient warming. If we are warming, generally speaking, we can modify and we can adapt to that. And we can also probably modify even the way our homes are constructed, in which, if we are going to be looking at some warmer summers in some places overall, even by a degree or two centigrade, that, maybe we find a way that we are able to use less air conditioning than the conventionally defined house. But those are things you can adapt to over time, right? You just do it that way.
Our memories tend to be bad, and you don't remember. You might remember that heat wave from 2 years ago or last year or whatever it was. We've never seen anything like it. But if you look at the actual data, you probably have, and it's probably been worse. And I just got back from Texas where I spoke last week, and down there I took a look at the Texas temperatures because everybody there that attended most of those thought that it was getting hotter in Texas, and the maximum temperature and heat waves were increasing. I showed them the data showing that heat waves going back to 1895 have actually been in decline, that maximum temperatures in Texas today in the last decade or so are about what they were in the 20s and 30s.
I think, though, we've gotten used to air conditioning, so we get more sensitized to extra hot times. But I have a book at home which talked about the Rogue Valley with the building of the railroad through this area back in the 1800s, and what it had, it was astounding to look at it. And we're thinking it's just hot now. Back then, 110, 115, just the way it is today here sometimes in the summer, and that was back then in the 1860s. So things haven't changed that much overall. Okay, that's the bottom line.
No.
All right. Well, we'll certainly put all your information up there. To find out more about Chloe the Clownfish Sleeps Well, which I was told by a friend has not hit Amazon yet, not on Amazon yet, right? I don't think it's on Amazon quite yet, but you can find out more about these and other books with Gregory Wrightstone at co2learningcenter.com, co2learningcenter.com.